Welcome, everybody, to episode 285 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, August 16th, 2017. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by my co-host, J-Trip.
How you doing, hello. J-Trip?
That's so creepy.
That's my ego impersonation.
I think that you have to do that for the remainder of the show.
Absolutely, positively not.
It's a little off-putting. I think if you did that for the remainder of the show that you... I don't know. Would people listen to hear it go like poorly, or would people just stop listening because it was that bad?
This is the voice that represents the state of the U.S., J-Trip.
Oh, God. Okay. So we've approached the moment in the show where you say something offensive and then I laugh uncomfortably.
Yes.
very quickly.
Record timing, yes. There they have it. Welcome, everybody. We don't have a guest lined up for today's show, so we're just going to talk about some of the headlines making news throughout the week, and who knows? We may talk about some more uncomfortable things, because that's fun to do. Yeah. Making J-Trip uncomfortable is one of my favorite pastimes. But anyway, so I guess I'll start off by saying I've been dealing with some personal issues as of late. My parents are going through some issues. They're getting ready to move because my dad has a great job opportunity out in Utah, and there's some personal marital things, other things going on. It's kind of throwing me for a loop. And then just Twitter. You know, I took a Twitter vacation a few months ago, and it was wonderful. It was glorious. But I used Twitter as a means of keeping tabs on what's going on in the WordPress space. I follow a number of WordPress personalities. People, companies. I used to treat it as a sort of real-time feed reader. But and John, maybe your feed is different, but based on the people you follow. But and from my perspective, before Donald Trump was elected president, or as the time was getting closer to the election, my Twitter feed was rather loud and boisterous and upset. And then, since Donald Trump has been in office and so many other events that have taken place since then in the United States related to Donald Trump and the office and his staff and whatever else, my Twitter feed has become tweets and retweets of anger all day, all the time. I mean, borderline rage from people. Yeah. And Sarah and I were talking about this the other day, and I brought this up to a few other people in the WordPress community who sort of on the same page, where reading Twitter, you come from the interaction, but you leave with a migraine before you can potentially get the interaction. Because, and I was thinking about this, you know, social media has given so many people a voice that maybe didn't have one before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a great thing. It could be used for so many beneficial purposes. But I think maybe it's just because of the people I follow, and they're all sort of on the same mindset here. My feed is just filled with voices of anger, and that voice has a volume level that just keeps getting ramped up, where that's all I see is tweets and retweets of anger around Trump and politics and whatever else. And there's a few tweets scattered here and there about WordPress stuff, but Twitter's becoming more and more of a place where I'm going to have to avoid it and potentially just use my feed reader, go back to RSS again, because it's peaceful there. I could control it there. I'm not inundated with all this rage that so many people have. And maybe my psyche and my mentality would just be better off for it. What have you seen in your feed?
So I went through, I mean, I use Twitter quite a bit, and I definitely went through a phase where I used it for primarily for WordPress related things. And then over time, which has been, you know, probably close to going on eight or nine years, maybe, it's so kind of slowly devolved into like less WordPress related things and more like personal chit chat with people that I like know in person, or friends or WordPress people or whatever else. And so for me it's been hard, because I like to try and get involved, but it's instead, I feel like I've got caught up in I got caught up in the same loop that I think most of the people that I follow are caught up in, where like I see something come through and I think like, of course I support this person, so I will retweet it. Or of course this makes sense and I support that idea or the conversation, or I think that thread is neat. And so then I just start kind of like reading a lot and, but kind of aimlessly retweeting things that are not really calculated or not really part of like necessarily what I personally think or believe. I'm more or less just being supportive of other people's stuff. And so that has taken some exercise for me to stop doing over the course of the past few weeks. And there was a tweet from Dave Weiner, who ironically enough, you know, responsible for RSS and a lot of other things, had tweeted something that stuck with me that was kind of a reminder that, you know, Twitter is yours to choose who to follow and what kind of experience you want from it. And so I made it a point to block the people that were over the top, to unfollow people that, like, I just wasn't interested in the things that they were talking about anymore. And if what I want to do is focus more on tech or focus more on mental health or focus more on positive things, then I have to curate that list myself. And it kind of feels like I'm secretly breaking up with people because they're people I've known for a really long time. But at the same time, they're doing their thing and I support that, but I can't always have all of that it coming in all day, all the time. So yeah, I could just check Twitter less, or yeah, I could just use Twitter less. I could blog more. There's like all sorts of other solutions, but the first version of a solution for me was like, well, let's try liking fewer things, retweeting fewer things. And if I think that I like something, maybe I should try to engage in that person to tell them why I like it. And if it's not a person that I'm comfortable engaging with, then I should choose how I'm going to follow them going forward. And so maybe overthinking it and maybe like making this into a bigger issue in the world than it is. But I'm really trying hard to do good instead of just reading bad. And so it's like, I want to know what's going on. I want to stay informed. I want to be supportive. I want to do all those things. But at the same time, like, I kind of need to concentrate on the things it is that I'm trying to accomplish and hope that I'm able to pull that off as good as I can. And if somebody actually needs something from me, they'll let me know. I'm not just going to find it organically and suddenly solve some person's problem for them. So I don't know, man. It's been
I have to really review my use of Twitter and how important it is for me. You know, I thought it was important for me to do my job, but the more over time, it seems to be not as important as I thought it would be. I mean, I have a bunch of great DM direct messages, conversations there, but yeah, I mean, who am I to tell people how they should use Twitter for my personal enjoyment when there are things that I could use like mutes and blocks and filters and unfollowing people, but I'm lazy and I would rather just go back to the Twitter the way it was before, but I know that's not going to happen. So now I got to really evaluate whether, you know, how integral Twitter is for me. And maybe I get back to just instead of tweeting, start writing a couple of sentences or tweets on my personal blog, which automatically sends a link to Twitter. And then if somebody has a response or a message, they could respond to that or maybe leave a comment on the site. But, you know, I received a tweet today from somebody who says, you know, Jeff, your Twitter feed, you're posting it's a lot less WordPressy these days and a lot more poetic. And I'm like, yeah, you know, I'm posting pictures of animals, flowers. Like today, I wrote a tweet that said, August always does a great job of reminding me with colors and there's subtle hints that fall is right around the corner. And I've actually received a number of compliments saying that they enjoy my Twitter feed. They enjoy the fact that I'm not publishing all these political things that are. You know, around everywhere else. So that was kind of neat to hear.
Yep. Back in the day when Matt used to post lots of pictures of food, I think that I accidentally followed suit. You know, Matt was sort of a role model for me early on. And so I've gone
through that phase too, taking pictures of my dinner.
Yeah. And so I think I always kind of used my Twitter feed as a dumping ground for photos and weird thoughts and ideas and stuff. But I kind of, I don't want to say that I regret it, but it, there's a lot of history in Twitter that isn't necessarily really representative of where I am right now. And so it's important to keep that archive and learn from it or have it available and all those things. Right. And if you, even if you look back on Matt Mullenweg's blog, he has posts from, you know, all the way back to zero that, you know, are, you know, awkward, weird podcasts or photos and stuff. But like, that's just part of your own experience online. I think it's a good example of owning all of your own content in your own space in the way that you want to. And I don't know that I have necessarily done that exactly with Twitter the way that that I think that I want to going forward. So, and Instagram too, or any of these places, it's kind of hard to feel like I'm doing the right thing by putting anything in these networks. Like, it never felt great, but it, I think it feels worse for me now. And I think about future development for features in Buddy Press, and I really don't want to perpetuate all of the same feelings towards software that I am having with Instagram or Twitter or Facebook or anything else. Like, if we're going to build new things into it, I really want it to be better or more impactful or nicer or have more value or different in a way that is like helpful to humanity and isn't just a dumping ground for, you know, drivel or whatever else. I don't know. It's part of the thing I think that makes WordPress and democratizing publishing important is you get the freedom to publish whatever you want and learn what your voice online is going to be. And hopefully we all take a step back and figure out if what we're actually posting online really is what we feel or represents what we have in our hearts anymore. And for me, I don't know that it has. So taking a break or stepping back is a good thing.
Have you taken a Twittercation? Or, and by the way, I didn't even mention Facebook. Facebook, I try and keep more personal to keep my relationships established to people I actually know in real life. I've kind of slipped on that a little bit, but Facebook for me is a lot less noisy and a little bit more focused. But have you taken a vacation from social media yet? And if so, how did you feel? Because for me, when I didn't have Twitter, it was like, well, yeah, you know, I'm tweeting in my head. I wish I could write a couple of these things and just put them out there on Twitter like I used to. But all in all, it feels kind of great, you know, not doing this Twitter thing.
The last time that I legitimately turned it all off was at the end of my brief period at 10Up, was just because it was exhausting and of kind of a whirlwind of activity. And so it was like, okay, let's really reevaluate what I think is important and where I want to focus my energy and all that kind of stuff. But I agree. I usually use Facebook for more personal type things, but it's hard. I that has also kind of gone away because I'll get so many friend requests from other people in the WordPress community that I do consider friends, but we've only really met in person a handful of times and we're not really that close or have like an intimate kind of relationship. And so I will accept pretty much anybody's friend request on Facebook, but
except mine.
I would feel really bad. Yeah, I would have blocked you a long time ago if you would have kept using your voice from earlier. I go back and forth too. Like I would like to post more pictures or more selfies or more stuff that I'm doing or actively involved in or whatever else, but I feel like it's a little braggadocious. I feel like I don't, like if it was important to the world, it would already be important and that me talking about it doesn't do any good. I don't know. I'm kind of in a weird place with projects and stuff. So I could probably use one, or I'll tell you what I would like to do. And I may do this at some point. I would like to employ some sort of bot to like go back through my Twitter history and just unlike everything that I've ever liked, because I basically just used it to like let people know that I read their tweet. Like I just went through and liked like everything that was a notification to me. I would just like it because I didn't want to reply, but I didn't want to have people to think that I was ignoring them, which is like a terrible like use case for liking stuff on Twitter. So I just want to like erase everything I've ever liked on Twitter ever. That's really the only thing that is important to me. I don't know that time off would be that helpful, but maybe. I don't know. I'd like to blog more. I know that's like the typical thing that we talk about, but I'd like my natural instinct to be to just run to my blog and post stuff.
That's what mine used to be. I used to write all the time on my personal site, and now I'm lucky if I get a couple posts on there a year because all my stuff is either going towards the tavern or on Twitter or Facebook. You know,
it's just the audience. The audience problem, right? You just don't have
the instant interaction.
Yeah, I don't know. How do we really solve that problem? We tried with Jetpack Jetpack comments and reblogs and stuff like that, and I don't really feel like that necessarily has solved the problem that I feel like I have with engagement on my blog. And I feel like I get enough traffic where people are reading it, or there's enough of an archive there where, you know, stuff I've posted is useful to other people in the world. So I don't really feel like I'm like not, you know, being a good WordPress citizen by having a totally abandoned blog, but I would like a legitimate way to really have more insightful interactions in a place where people actually want to come back to. And even on the make sites on make.wordpress.org are that, but they're so hyper-focused on like very specific, like kind of work-related things. And sometimes my brain, especially recently in the past few years, really just wants to go down the more philosophical, thought experiment type directions that, because I kind of feel like we're solving and resolving the same problems over and over and over again in WordPress and on the web. And so that isn't real attractive to me to keep solving the same problem. We've already solved a lot of those problems. And so, I'm not as infatuated with a lot of what's going on as maybe I used to be, because it's, a new generation of people solving the same problems with new approaches. But I'm old enough now to watch the next. It's like the music you listen to when you were a kid is always the best music in the world, and the music that came before you was too old and weird, and the new music is like the crap that the kids listen to.
Like
WordPress is that way for me a little bit, where I really like the era when WordPress was much simpler and WP Admin was more uniform across navigational areas. And once we started changing that with the newer updated fancy media gallery, and then menus was different, and then themes got cards. And, you know, once everything was this brand new, shiny, individual, unique place in the admin area, it's just like, it's all different and it doesn't seem as easy to use anymore. And I don't want to, like, we solved these problems. We had user testing. We had all these things done back then to tell us what to do. And Jen did a great job with guiding the project back then. And now we're in a different place. And I don't really like where we're at, but I don't think that anyone really wants to listen to me sounding like I'm being negative about it, when really I'm like really trying to be as positive about all of it as I can. I just feel like I've seen it all before. So
this ain't no crazy horse.
right. That's where I don't want to complain, and I don't want to, you know, say I told you so, and I don't want to be the person who's constantly that way. But so I think I try to shy away from it, because I also don't want to make somebody else's WordPress experience worse. If they're learning how to contribute and they're building new features and they're doing cool new things, who am I to try and come in with some weird opinion about what I think, when maybe I'm wrong? I could easily be wrong. So I try to sit back and watch it happen, and, you know, offer some direction and guidance whenever I feel like I can. I don't know.
What do you say we dive into some of the news of the week, and we'll start off.
I would prefer not to if we have a choice, but, you know, I suppose we got a show to do.
Yeah, well, without the news, what am I going to – I guess we could talk about on and on about everything. But I want to give some people some heads up on what's been happening lately in the WordPress space. And first up, the WordPress Foundation is looking to sponsor some open source educational events. Specifically, they want to shine more light on the potential of open source software in countries where there is less participation in open source projects. The program is targeting communities in Latin and South America, Africa, Oceania, and Asia. And it looks like they're trying to represent the success of the WordCamp Incubator Program, which brought three new camps to Indonesia, Zimbabwe, and Colombia. Based on some of the events that took place there, some of those initiatives, Harare is hosting its second WordCamp in November, and the local meetup group has nearly doubled over the past year. So that right there is just a sampling of the kind of success that they've had with the incubator program, which is pretty cool. So the foundation is looking for organizers that will host a introduction to open source type of event, something like a 2-hour workshop using training materials available in the WordPress handbook. And the goal is to introduce attendees to the world of open source software, the GPL license, and how it is important for WordPress as an open source project. And the foundation will be subsidizing the events up to $500. So they would be free for anyone to attend. Now, there's a 10-question application open for those who want to organize an event in 2017. And applications will close on August 21st, and successful applicants will be notified by September 8th. So if you are interested in partaking or organizing an event like that, be sure to check out wptamer.com. A link to that will be in the show notes. But that's a pretty cool initiative, and nice to see the WordPress community. Is it WordPress Community Support, WCS, that part of the foundation spurring or supporting initiatives that just aren't WordCamps anymore, but maybe branching off a little bit, willing to help out financially with other types of cool initiatives.
I think it's important that this happens, and now is a really good time, because WordPress is such a major influence on the open web as it is today. And so bringing broader awareness to other parts of the world that this is an option, and that it's important, and why it's important, and providing context to all those things. This is a pretty generous gift to anyone that's in an area that could use a little bit of help getting, you know, some food or beverages, or securing a facility for a night to make an event like that happen. It's kind of a really cool gesture, I think. It's good timing.
WooCommerce forks Select 2, releases Select Woo as a drop-in replacement, which has improved accessibility. So Select 2 is a widely used jQuery-based library for making custom drop-down menus. I know a number of projects actually use this library. And a lot of people have been wondering what's going on with the project, or if it's been abandoned, because the repository hasn't seen any activity since February, and there's about 115 pull requests that have piled up. So WooCommerce, there's some longstanding accessibility issues with this library. So what WooCommerce did is they opted to fork it, and they've merged some of the pull requests that were submitted to the original project. Now, Select Woo, which is the name of the new, is the library, is backwards compatible and can be used the same way as Select 2 by simply replacing the select2.js file. It's been optimized for WordPress plugin development and can optionally be initialized with .select Woo in order to run alongside other versions of Select 2 that may be used by other plugins on the site. Now, it needs a bit more testing. Beta 1 is available. And the WooCommerce team has actually created a testing page with different example pages, so those using screen reading software can easily test for bugs. Now, when we talk about forking, which is a topic that I think Triple J knows a little something about, forking is usually the last resort scenario for extending popular open source libraries. I think of it as, well, I used to think of it before your presentation as the nuclear option. No,
sure.
Try and avoid it at all means possible. But the WooCommerce team wanted the flexibility of improving the project on their own timeline. And a couple of developers who were concerned asked, well, what will happen if Select2 ends up getting back on track and there's all this activity? And the team said, well, they'll just submit pull requests to the Select2 repository. Things will be merged in and everything will be backwards compatible. We'll be back to where we started. But so I wanted to talk a little bit about maybe your experience with Select2, this development, and maybe you can give us a little thing about forking.
Yeah, so a few years ago, I was working on a project that needed essentially the features of what Select2 is. And so I did my own deep research into what the options and alternatives were. And I ultimately ended up picking the next closest competitor to Select2, which is another piece of software called Chosen. And so Chosen, very similar to Select2. They are kind of feature for feature, but different ways of thinking about things, different approaches. And so I made a plugin that replaces all of the drop-down select boxes in WP Admin with a Chosen select box and styles it so that it kind of looks the way that WordPress is supposed to look. And, you know, at this point, I'm sure it has dozens of installations or whatever, because I don't really talk about it very much. But it was kind of around that point when I picked Chosen that everyone started really talking about and picking Select2. So it's like, you know, in a Vue versus React kind of world, I felt like I had picked the wrong thing because all this other momentum went into Select2 after I had doubled down on Chosen. And then the problem is that WooCommerce or Easy Digital Downloads and a bunch of other plugins all package their own version of Select2. And some of them even package their own version of Chosen. I think even the Event Calendar plugin, a few of them packaged their own. And you know, back in the day, right, when there was enough momentum behind some project like this or some library, it would end up just someone would lobby for it to be pulled into WordPress core. And then something like Select2 would just come packaged with it so everyone could use the same library. Whereas today, if you have WooCommerce installed plus an event calendar installed, and they both come with their own Select2 packaged with them, and they both pull them in and enqueue them, and they both have their own version of styling that gets attached to them, then you usually end up with it just being broken. Like, usually neither one works. And then, or one overrides the other in a way that the other one didn't anticipate. And so, the way that I will say this is that it is great that the WooCommerce team is forking Select2 to keep the project alive and see ongoing development through. But I really am still just not a fan of plugins like WooCommerce packaging Select2 with it, because it's going to have problems with other plugins, and it's a maintenance burden and overhead for everybody. And then it's going to cause users to have problems when they activate two of those plugins, and then the whole part of WP Admin features just stop working. And to be honest, I don't really ultimately think that this is a problem that WordPress should solve. I think this is a problem that operating systems should solve. Operating systems come with input boxes, text areas, list boxes, checkboxes, options, all of the controls and objects that we've had on modern operating systems for dozens of years now. And so the fact that operating systems like Windows or Android or iOS or macOS, they haven't come up with a legitimately usable, user-friendly multi-select control that is globally available and accessible across all users in all operating systems, across all devices, blows my mind that we still have to solve this problem in the web. We have to solve this within the browser ourselves. It doesn't make any sense. Like, it's such an old paradigm. Like tabs, like, we still have to draw our own tab menus on the web. Like, there's no unified interface for tabs. We have these basic controls, but anything else above and beyond the basic core subset of elements to interact with a user, the operating systems just haven't natively decided that tabs are real, menus are real, dropdowns are real, multi-selects are real. They're all terrible. So, like, it, in my opinion, the WooCommerce folks are, they have made the best possible decision that still is going to suck. Like, it's still not great for other users that are going to end up with conflicts using Select 2. So hopefully I'm wrong, or hopefully this gets worked out in a better way. But I don't know that pulling it into WordPress core is 100% the right thing to do, but it might be the only best option. But it's hard to lobby for that if Select 2 as a project is abandoned, because if that means that puts all of the weight on the WooCommerce team to support it going forward. And then once it gets merged into WordPress core, what happens when momentum stops or stalls, or our fascination and love for that type of user interface element wanes, or whatever else? Like
backbone.
I don't know.
I try and say that word every week. I don't know.
And jQuery UI even has, you know, the date picker is great, and a lot of plugins pull that in. But because jQuery UI is packaged with WordPress core, they're all using the same version of it. And so they can choose to style it however they want. And I've written my own version of styling for that too. But because it comes with WordPress core, means it's less of a problem for plugin authors and for users. So hopefully the end result of what the WooCommerce folks, what I would like to see is all plugins stop using Select 2 or Chosen. Just don't even include them at all. And if your user interface is as such that it requires a complex multi-select like that, you should rethink the interface that you've designed and built and try and build something simpler. And then if what you want is to allow for a Select 2 plugin to come in and globally make all of these things better, okay. But it kind of bums me out that we're still stuck in this plugins having to invent their own UI elements problem. We should be past this by now, I think.
So Gutenberg 0.8.0, yes, we got to see Gutenberg today, introduces 5 new blocks, categories, text columns, short code, audio, and video. This release adds a couple of blocks, and it also takes away the controversial opt-in usage tracking code from the plugin. Now, Gutenberg 0.7 added some code. It allowed the team to see which blocks were being used the most, and eventually that caused a little bit of an uproar or conversations, and eventually it was taken out. I know Matt Mullerwig was quoted as saying that he believes no actionable data could be gleaned from no actionable stuff could be gleaned for having that in core. So it was removed. And now one of the first examples we had of core using usage opt-in data tracking is gone. So that's gone. So you don't have to worry about it. Anywho, we could have a deeper conversation about telemetry and usage data at another time. It's definitely a very interesting conversation I'd like to have, especially with Matt. We got to get Matt on the show at some point. I'd love to hear his thoughts on that.
Matt Morton?
We can host a telemetry roundtable with Matt and Morton.
Sure. That would be a really good episode, I think.
Sounds like a cool enemy, Matt and Morton.
No pressure. It's like Rick and Morty, but Matt and Morton.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's what I was thinking. Anywho, one of the cool blocks in this release. Now, I know many people have been wanting a way to easily create text columns sometimes in their content. And a lot of people have used plugins or page builders sometimes have elements where you can put text into 2 or 3 vertical columns on a page. Well, there's a new block in Gutenberg that actually allows you to put your text in columns, and it works out pretty nice. Now, they say that the text block is an initial exploration of multiple columns for text-only content. And depending on testing, it may not be the implementation that ends up landing in the plugin permanently. Mm-hmm. So it's more like an experimentation. Let's see how this works, and if they hit a home run, we'll keep it. If not, well, it might be something they'll implement or improve. But it's kind of cool to see the text be able to have that versatility within a block. Now, there's also a video block. There's a couple of other blocks, short code blocks everywhere. But definitely check out the Gutenberg 8.0 if you haven't already. 0.8.0, I should say. And also, the Gutenberg contributors have updated the design document. So this they've updated the goals and concepts for what this project is all about. And I'll just read a brief quote from it, where it says, "Ultimately, the vision for Gutenberg is to make it much easier to author rich content through ensuring good defaults, wrapping and bundling, advanced layout options, blocks, and making the most important actions immediately available. Authoring content with WordPress should be accessible to anyone." And, that's really one of the fundamental goals of Gutenberg in and of itself. And
I really like that they're experimenting with the text blocks, and this is the type of feedback that can replace actual, you know, user testing and data. Because if this approach is bad enough where people don't like it and choose to speak up about it, that is, I think, more actionable and better feedback than just raw data. So I hope that from now until 5.0 or what have you, that there's more of that. There's more experimentation. Now's the time to do it, and now is when you're going to get a ton of feedback.
And one of the interesting parts about Gutenberg is the idea of post formats and perhaps turning post formats into a block, or removing post formats from core, and then each post format becomes a block. Well, Joan Asmussen commented on the article. He's one of the lead designers, developers on the Gutenberg project, and he says that post formats are not going away, and if they ever will be, it'll be somewhere down the road, done as a separate task by a separate team, probably like the link menu. He says that post formats are key to the genesis of blocks as a concept. Back in WordPress 3.6 days, which is around when post formats were added to core, post formats were a first-class citizen that were being worked on, but really didn't turn out the way. But actually, it was more like the visual interface. I think a release that we're working on the post formats UI, it wasn't polished enough at the time to add to core, and then it never really quite made it to core. You know, at the end of it. So blocks could be the user interface that replaces or enhances post formats. So the post format technology itself, how it works, can stay in core, and then the block will just be the UI for it, which maybe that'll work. Maybe that'll regenerate some interest in how post formats work and are displayed on a site. And I'm kind of curious to see how that turns out.
Mm-hmm. The problem with post formats back then was it wasn't that it was a bad idea, and it wasn't even that the UI wasn't right, because Alex King had a really cool setup for how post formats could work, and very deeply integrated into the posting experience and interface. But I think the problem and what the leadership team probably learned from post formats was how important it is to just have confidence in the direction that you're going. Because I think what post formats lacked was deep commitment and confidence to the feature and the direction that it should go. And so because there wasn't a lot of confidence in where it should be, nobody committed to it. And then it sat. And so with something like Gutenberg, where there is a deep commitment to making this happen, you can see just how much activity there is that's happening around the new editor, because everyone, and I mean, Matt included, but everyone has said this is a thing that now is the time to improve this thing, and let's put all of our attention towards it. Where with post formats, everyone was like, Tumblr's doing it, and yeah, we can see why this might be important, but there's no real clear path from posts formats to themes, and we can imagine what a block would look like, and what if my post has multiple of these formats, but formats are really only picking one at a time. And so there were just lots of like just weirdness around it. And so the reason it didn't work out is because no one really committed to how it really should work in the first place. So I think that lesson was learned, and we've shown that ever since.
But and now thinking about content in a block structure, where you have these different blocks that make up an entire post, to me, post formats fits into that wonderfully. Except, you know, back in the day, post formats, you could assign one to a post. With the Gutenberg editor, you can have multiple post formats, which I still don't know if that makes sense, or even the idea of why would you select a post format for a quote block if you could just have a quote block. You know, because it used to be quotes for post formats. My biggest issue with post formats is that when you use one, you assign one, and you did a preview of the post, you would see what the post looks like in the single page view, which was not the view you would see on the front of the website that had styling attached to it related to the post format. So you could never get a true picture of what that content would actually look like. And therefore, I never used them.
Yep. And my problem with them was that because themes would add support for them, that if you switched to a theme that didn't support post formats, say that three times fast, that you suddenly had, you would lose the UI, and there would be no interface to select or change the post formats that you had set previously, because add theme support would show or hide the UI. So you would switch to a theme that didn't support post formats, and then you had no way to change the data in the database through WordPress. We kind of ended up with this weird API that was like, why would we remove the, you've already saved all this data in there, and now you're not going to let me go back and edit any of it because my theme doesn't support it? It was weird. So like, there were a lot of things that were weird with post formats, but I think it was a good learning experience for everybody. And I don't know that we've necessarily made similar or the same mistake since then.
Mm-hmm. WordPress.com's business plan. We've mentioned this in a couple of episodes back, but WordPress.com has allowed business plan subscribers a way to tap into WordPress.org's third-party ecosystem. Now, earlier this year, WordPress.com launched an experiment giving business plan subscribers the ability to install third-party plugins and themes. Automatic recently concluded the experiment and has officially made it part of the subscription plan, which is about $25 a month. With Mark Armstrong, Automatic representative, said that with support for plugins and third-party themes, WordPress.com business users will be able to connect their sites to great email and social media tools, e-commerce solutions, publishing and subscription services, along with more. Now, this is I wrote about this on the Tavern. You and I talked about this. You brought up a great point about the support aspect of all this. Maybe they have figured that out. And there's a couple of things that are interesting about this announcement. We'll get into them here. First, I discovered that on WordPress.com, there are two user interfaces. One that is built, you know, Calypso-like, and the other is actually WP Admin. Now, you can only... right now, you can only add a third-party plugin, install, upload a plugin if you go through the WP Admin interface. The ability to do that in Calypso does not exist. However, the team is aware of it, and they're going to be streamlining both interfaces in the near future so that they both have the same functionality. Now, something I thought, other people got on me about this, that it's no big deal. This is business. This is so what, brouhaha. But I thought it was a detail that needed to be mentioned. And that is that with this ability, customers can upload non-100% GPL license code to WordPress.com. And I thought it was – I made the point to where Matt has been a very strong advocate of the GPL to the point where he will recognize and support things across the WordPress.org ecosystem that are 100% GPL. So that means assets, images, PHP code, all that jazz, really more like for themes, plugins mostly is PHP code. But with all the, and there's been incident, well, I don't want to call it an incident, but there have been examples in the past where Matt has used his influence to provoke people outside of the WordPress.org domain, marketplaces such as Envato to provide a 100% GPL license option to its authors. Authors who choose not to sell their items with 100% GPL license are excluded from being able to sponsor or speak at WordCamps. So I just thought it was odd that on a platform Matt Mulloy fully controls, that he would allow the option for customers to upload code that may not be 100% GPL. Now, when you upload code to WordPress.com, no distribution occurs. So it's not like people will be willy-nilly be able to download the code. And I realized that maybe this is a weird, I don't know, straw man argument or something. I just find it odd that the ability to upload non-GPL code, for instance, running thesis theme on WordPress.com is a reality. It's a thing. You can do that now if you wanted to. And I don't know, I'm scratching my head.
So I think this is a really interesting time and to me, I don't scratch my head at this one. To me, this is pretty obvious.
I realize that it's business. They're just doing what you can already do at all the other managed hosting providers. But for me, I just felt the difference was, well, this is a platform Matt controls.
It is. Of course it is. But it's a platform that staffs 500 plus employees, that has investors, that has goals and revenue goals, and that it has to continue to meet or exceed year over year like any other business that's trying to stay bootstrapped and profitable. So this goes back to my my whole and you know kind of a weird way to think about it, but it in the WordPress community, Matt plays the very complex he plays both sides. He's the spiritual leader of the open source project, and so he has the responsibility on his shoulders to communicate what he thinks that vision should be in order to stay the course on the free and open side of it. And so what he says in that role is going to mean something very different than what he thinks is right or what he thinks is best for the sustainability and long-term profitability of the company mm-hmm. that he has started and that he is ultimately responsible for keeping profitable and keeping employees happy and keeping users happy and everything going forward. And so it is very is a very Pope-like position where it's not a thing that exists in the world in many other capacities. And so it's not always easy to see the difference or why there's a difference or to believe that someone could compartmentalize those two in a strict and easy sort of way, because it can be a complicated relationship. But I guess that's why I'm weird. That's why, you know, I don't see it as a problem, because I haven't seen it be I haven't seen that type of problem occur yet. I think it makes total sense that a company like Automattic would want to allow whatever types of plugins and code to work there. And I think,
if they don't allow that option, then that takes away a huge value add on choosing it in the first place. Because if I can't do it here, I could do it anywhere else.
The point that Chris Lemma had said from Liquid Web about how rare it is to see this type of a kind of top down or sort of backward.
I can actually read the quote. He says, quote, while not impossible, we rarely see manufacturers get into the same business as their distributors or retail partners. That's because it can create a lot of unwanted, unplanned for, unintended secondary consequences. But to inexpensive host, this is one of those head turners, because they were assured for oh so long that this wasn't the game Automattic was getting into, end quote.
Yeah. And I think that's true. It's you don't usually see companies like you don't see like a Harley Davidson suddenly start going after mopeds or other, they just don't go off brand like that. And so not that, you know, I mean, if Automattic's brand is just WordPress hosting, then it doesn't matter if it's multi-site or single site or whatever. But I can see it's pretty clearly why other web hosts that are really there that have been trying to double down real hard on their own self-hosted silos of safe and secure and performant WordPress hosting are probably scratching their heads at it. I think it's the smarter web hosts are the ones that have really had the time to learn and separate themselves and carve a niche out for themselves. We've got companies like Pantheon that have a lot of experience with Drupal stuff already to kind of anticipate which way the pendulum is going to swing for WordPress sites. And then, you know, folks like Pagely that have been at and doing WordPress hosting and leveling themselves up for close to 10 years now, they've gotten to a point where they've already been kind of competing with a VIP style WordPress hosting. Whereas the, if I were a smaller web host or a company starting to get into WordPress hosting right now, it's pretty turbulent times to, cause you've got like the elephant that has always told you it would never be in the room enters the room. hello.
Let's also bring up another subject in that a lot of people have been discussing as even more brand confusion. What are the and this kind of will lead into my pick later on in the show, but for years we've been trying to explain to people with web pages, sessions, meetup sessions at meetups, presentations, what are the differences between WordPress.com and WordPress.org? And over the years, the differences have been going away and the similarities have been increasing. And now that you can, on the business plan, install third-party themes and plugins like you can if you were at any other web host, somebody brought up the point where, you know, for somebody who may be new or getting into WordPress and they see that, you know, this is the automatic or WordPress.com is WordPress, you know, how will this impact brand confusion? Is it just going to increase? Is WordPress.com just going to be what so many people end up, even though it already happens, but just assuming, well, this is WordPress. This is the company that makes WordPress.
I have a hunch that, so I've been saying for a really long time, and going back to probably before I even was at Automatic and just side conversations about stuff, that with WordPress.com and with Automatic choosing to do this, it still solidifies for me, it is more evidence to support my uninformed, no little bird told me theory that that it's good for .org and .com to feel the same than the damage that it comes for users if they are polarized and different. When Calypso is all people see on WordPress.com, and then when WordPress.org is a completely different thing, that is the worst problem that we could possibly have. If any user could sign up for WordPress.com and get a WordPress.com site that was exactly the same as what they would spin up from a self-hosted site on WordPress.org, and if WordPress.com, in theory, weren't the big, huge, multi-site installation that it was, but instead it just happened to be the easiest way to just run your own WordPress site for free, and it happened to have a bunch of paid add-ons or whatever else that it had, that to me seems like a goal worth working towards. And let's imagine, I kind of talked about with the support burden of plugins and other things that get you could upload to a WordPress.com business site today. What if that becomes a revenue stream for the folks over at Easy Digital Downloads or the folks over at GiveWP? If they're able to tap into an additional revenue stream from hosted sites that include WordPress.com, but also all of these other web hosts, and WordPress.com having the influence or breadth that it has, let's imagine that 10 years from now, a world where maybe the difference between the two is the same as the difference between GitLab.org and GitLab.com or Mattermost.org or Mattermost.com. You know what the difference is? It doesn't matter. One's hosted, one's not, and there isn't this inside baseball, really brokenhearted, stubborn kind of problem that, you know, they're taking over everything or they're in the way. They're just, one helps support the other. So if WordPress.com is a way to help support plugin authors or theme authors, the way that some of the other open source projects have been handling it, if we're able to work towards that, and I see those moves happening, and whether or not they're on purpose, whether or not I'm right, it looks that way to me still, that we should wait and see how it goes, and hopefully the scrappier, smaller, faster, easier to react web hosts are already plotting their next big, amazing product launches to make WordPress even better outside and around whatever it is that Automattic is working on. Because if I'm wrong, then someone else is going to, you know, have the opportunity to come in and do the end-on move and make it great. So
we know one thing for sure. There ain't no rebranding that's going to be happening between .com and .org. That's never going to happen.
But what if eventually Matt came out and said, and this is a completely ridiculous idea, but what if Matt came out and said, hey, y'all, I'm giving WordPress.com to the foundation too. What would that mean? What would happen there if all of the gift of WordPress hosting was just free and unlimited up to a certain point, up to a certain number of hits per day or a certain server load or whatever the boundaries would be. And from there, WordPress.com could say, okay, you've hit some magical threshold where free is no longer really an option. Why don't you look at exploring some other option like Liquid Web or Flywheel or
.com business plan.
Sure, whatever, right? Like if it just happened to be the way to get people into WordPress and get free and easy hosting right off the bat and then was a sales funnel or an upsell channel for getting all the other cool, or hey, you want to run an online shopping cart and you have these specific needs, well, this web host is really good at that, or you want to run BuddyPress, and so BuddyPress needs all these specific things, and the folks over at WeFuster are really awesome, and they're happy to help you, and da-da-da-da-da. Like, if that ends up being what could happen, why would that be a bad thing, right? If, I don't know, I just, it could be a lot different later than it is today.
I've got a couple of questions for you, this is big news. This is something, who would have ever thought? I mean, we joked around about it. They'll never get into this game, yet here they are. Mm-hmm. Why do you think WordPress.com is only now offering this feature? You know, why wasn't it available so many years ago?
So, again, without really knowing, but I know, I mean, back in the day when I was on the VIP team, we had already kind of loosely chatted and talked about and did a first version of the WordPress.com VIP Go kind of less expensive but still concierge type experience of sites. But if you think all the way back to the way that .com was invented in the first place, it was Matt's VIP friends. And every other opportunity to spin up multiple sites was kind of just a freebie. Like, all the free sites were subsidized by the VIPs that were paying for hosting. So it's where Automattic has always been and made its money with hosting. Strategic purchases like Gravatar and PolDaddy and on were, you know, useful to get WordPress relevant across the board or across the finish line and stuff. But this to me is not a surprise. I don't see this or having single sites or uploading plugins as a surprise. It seems like a very natural progression of what a company like Automattic that is smart and full of smart people would do. They would say, you know what, this big multi-site thing that we've built, that we've worked on for a really long time, it's kind of maybe end of life, or it's at least we are starting to see where other people are benefiting from a simpler stack or simpler setup. And if enough people say, yeah, I agree that that's simpler and we should do that, then any company that is full of smart people says, let's go try the other thing. So I'm not surprised by this at all.
All right. Well, So WordPress.com is competing head-to-head with Managed Host, and there's been initiatives established to grow the WordPress pie for all. How much of that pie do you think Automattic wants for itself? And considering it's a business with that's investor-backed, does it matter how much pie they want or get?
Those are two good different questions. So I would bet Automattic doesn't care about the pie as much as it cares about the toppings.
Okay.
Right? they want add-ons. They want to make delicious treats to make the pie better. They're a step ahead all the time. Okay. So if everyone else is making or worried about how big the slice of their pie is, then Automattic is looking at the future of what makes pie delicious. And so if it's Jetpack or if it's other things, whatever that might end up being, I think it's pretty evident that they've built and have seen the future of what that looks like. And so I don't imagine that that hosts are really going to be deeply as truly impacted by Automattic coming into the hosting space as maybe they will be accidentally eclipsed by not having a suite of add-ons the way that Automattic and Jetpack already has, by not having backups or video or anti-spam or brute force login or caching or these other things. If web hosts can't market and sell the toppings on the pie, then they're accidentally going to be removed from the dinner table.
What kind of is Jetpack a pie and all the modules or toppings? And if so, what kind of pie would Jetpack be?
Yeah. So
what kind of pie tastes good with 35 different toppings?
Jetpack isn't a pie. Jetpack is the very exclusively trademarked, patented, enforced recipe. It is for that no one can copy. And if someone does try to copy it, they're going to have to do it in a way that is like, you know, at a Coke versus Pepsi kind of level, because just Automattic and Jetpack has such an enormous head start for video and for Gravatar and every other piece of the things that make WordPress great. So everyone else just has so much catch up to do that Jetpack's not its own pie. It's the secret sauce recipe for Automattic.
And one of the other things I wanted to bring up too is from the user or customer's perspective. Let's say, and this is one of the unique advantages that WordPress.com has, where you sign up, you hear about WordPress, you know it's free, you go to WordPress.com, you sign up, you choose the site, and you get used to WordPress, you learn how it works. But let's say the time comes where you want to attach an e-commerce store, or you want to install different plugins, you want to open up the possibilities with themes, and you navigate to the business plan. Or maybe at some point in the future, this translates into other plans. They add this feature to other plans, which I could see happening at some point down the road. From a customer's perspective, it's like magical. You don't have to do any DNS changes. You don't have to upload, download, SQL, migrate. It's as simple as migrating or purchasing the upgrade. They migrate your plan over, they do something magical, and boom, you're right there. You don't have to worry about anything, all while staying in the same place. You just pay Automattic more money or WordPress.com money, and there you go. I mean, that is what a piece of convenience for customers to have that.
Yep.
You know, to get started on WordPress.com, which you can, and I think that's one of the unique advantages they have. And then at some point later, if you grow and you want flexibility, if you want what everybody else takes advantage of with using the WordPress.org open source project with the ecosystem of plugins and themes, you could do so right there in place, and I have to worry about all the other hassles that come with setting up your site on a web host.
I'm going to accidentally minimize the complexities of that problem, because there are people in the world right now that are using software to drive automobiles on the highway. like there are teams of people that are writing insane software on custom hardware to pilot an automobile 65 miles an hour down a freeway and stop for pedestrians and animals. And if that is sophisticated software, moving some MySQL database tables from one server to another server pales in comparison to the amount of complexity that other people are working on in the world. And so this accidentally minimizes all of the work and things that the complexities that go into this. And I don't
mean it was so hard for me 7 years ago,
but
thanks a lot, John.
Once this is built in a way that voice is so weird. Gosh, I wish you would have heard that voice. Once this is actually built and done, hopefully it won't really have to be revisited and built again. Guided transfer through Jetpack or moving your WordPress site from one host to another. There are other really cool tools that are out in the world, which kind of goes back to our Twitter conversation from earlier, because I think it's harder for some of the neat tools to bubble up into our space unless someone taps me on the shoulder and says, hey, John, this thing is really cool. You should check it out. I just don't see a lot of the stuff that people are working on, but there are neat ways that have nothing to do with Automatic or Jetpack to migrate a WordPress site from one host to another, or they have tools baked into when you upgrade from non-SSL to and getting a free SSL cert from Let's Encrypt or something else, that it'll go through your WordPress, all of your WordPress database tables, including serialized values, and change all of the URLs from HTTP to HTTPS. Like, these are things that are not really hard, like technically they're not really difficult problems, but automating them and then automating it in a way that you as a web host are 100% confident in are what make the self-driving car part of this really, really hard. So the ability to move and migrate and change and your web hosts and make decisions about your WordPress website. This is no different than you would switching a domain from one registrar to another, is a really, really vitally important next step for WordPress hosting and for communities to be able to say, you can truly take your website anywhere. And your web host will be kind of ubiquitous the same way that your cell phone carrier is. Nobody really, like, I really love AT&T. They're amazing. Like, nobody says that. The only time you're really upset about your cell phone carrier is when
it doesn't work.
And so eventually, I think the best case scenario for most web hosts is that no one will really think about them until they have a problem. They will just have money coming in and they will be doing their jobs. And that's kind of it. So I don't know. I guess we'll see how long it takes us to get to that point. But like last episode, like interoperability and getting web hosts to port websites from one host to another and having everyone agree on what those protocols and what those standards are, is going to be the next hurdle with that. But if you've ever installed a thermostat, if you've ever got a Nest, there's the same seven wires in every house pretty much all across the country, unless you've got someone who was creative on accident or you've got some older setup or something else. But for the most part, these were standards that like smart engineers agreed on a really long time ago. And so it is okay to agree on a standard if it helps everyone get something done. And so while everyone is busy building the secret sauce to try and move and get sites around from one place to another, hopefully someone is thinking about what that interoperability standard looks like to get and play friendly with competing friendly competitors in the space.
And one of the last things we're going to talk about today is that WordPress 4.9 will focus on code editing and customization improvements. This is going to be co-led by MeltChoice and Weston Reuter, and the development cycle kicked off in early August with beta 1 scheduled for early October, and they're targeting November 4th for the release of WordPress 4.9. So a couple of different things They're looking at doing is polishing up some existing features that have been added over the years, making some of them more user-friendly, including some long-awaited updates to the experience of editing theme and plugin files in the admin. Dun, dun, dun. There's my warning music. Right, we have to talk about that. Contributors are looking at adding a nested folder structure that will offer access to files deeper than two levels. They are also aiming to add better warnings for users who are editing themes and plugins, an improvement which Choice described as graduating from cowboy coding school. Says this could help prevent users from unknowingly making small errors that could have a negative impact on their sites. This also goes into the next improvement where they're going to be adding a syntax highlighter. So they're looking at the possibility of incorporating code mirror functionality into the customizer's custom CSS box, as well as the plugin and theme file editors. They're also looking at a couple of other features as well, possibly adding some features from the customized snapshots feature plugin and a whole bunch of other stuff as well. But I want to talk about a little bit about the syntax highlighting and just the idea of being able to edit file or theme and plugin files directly in the back end of WordPress. Now, this is, I've written about WordPress for years. We've had polls about this. We've had many discussions about this. And there's always an onslaught of people who say, why is this in core? Nope. No user should have such easy access to break their site, you know, with the code. And then there's the arguments of, well, they may not have access to an FTP client, or they may not have any other ability to edit the code. Okay, well, that's seems like a sane argument. But in my experience, it seems like it's way too easy to have a typo and to break your site, which I've done actually before, and then you white screen, and then you better hope you have FTP access so you can go in, download that file, remember what you changed, and undo that change and bring it back. Now, I'm hoping that at some point with these, I would like to see them disabled, but if we're going to have them, I would love to see revisions. I would love to see a way for these files to be edited safely without the concern or less of a concern of white screening your site. Mm-hmm. And the syntax highlighting stuff, that's all pretty nice. I mean, the edit CSS model module in Jetpack uses Code Mirror, and it's pretty cool. If we can make editing files as safe as possible, I think that would be one of my first priorities in terms of those editors in core. What do you think?
I go back and forth. I personally think that I've learned a lot about everything by breaking it anyways. And so I think as we're pretty lucky as humans that when we break something or when we are learning how to do something, that the moment we realize that we have made it worse, that the endorphins kick in and your brain starts working differently and you work to try and get out of that situation and problem quicker than if you were just lazily loafing around clicking on things. And so there is something to be said, and this isn't my way of saying that we should let everyone break all their sites all the time, but there is something that is very analog and raw to the learning experience of being able to log in and see the code and break it and give yourself that kick to learning quickly. And for most people, if your site is down for an hour, it doesn't matter, like, because your site is probably not critical. And if your site is critical, where you are losing actual revenue, then you don't go editing those files that way anyways. Like, there are so many things in the world that you can do. You can go straight into the outlet in any room in your house and shove your hand in it and kill yourself. You won't. Because you know that that's not what that's for. You know that that's not how that works. And so there are
lots of... I may have stuck some things in an electrical outlet. Okay, I'm just not... I'll end it there, but...
We're exposed to a lot of potential ways where breakage can occur, and most of the time that breakage doesn't occur. It's only when someone goes poking in a place and they're learning how something works, that they're going to cause some kind of damage. And so have I tried in my life replacing a power outlet without turning the power off? Of course I have, because I'm a moron, right? Like that's how you learn how to do those things the right way. At least that's how I learn how to do those things the right way. I mean, I definitely learn from other people's mistakes and watch a lot of YouTube videos and everything else, but
sure, that was a shocking discovery.
Yeah, I mean, on the list of ways that I have screwed things up and made mistakes in my life, burning out transmissions and clutches, and what do you do? That's how you learn how to shift a car, right? That's how you learn how to heel toe shift. That's how you learn how to rev match a car. That's how you learn how to do your own.
It's an age old philosophy. How do you learn if you don't make mistakes?
Yes,
those are all learning opportunities.
And coding editors on the web have come really far. Like, how many times has anyone gone to literally any one of the dozen great JavaScript editors online right now, or regular expression testers? Not me though, because I have memorized every regular expression by heart because I'm a software developer. But they're all great. Like, online editing, visual editing tools have come so far that having a really decent one baked into WordPress sounds attractive.
Yeah, well, we don't need a full-blown developer IDE environment in WordPress. That just wouldn't make any sense. At least to me, that'd be too much. But let's go in the Wayback Machine. Do you remember WordPress 2.8?
Of course I do. It's one of my favorite WordPresses.
Now, in WordPress 2.8, syntax highlighting was added to WordPress using the CodePress library. Do you remember that, sir?
I do remember that.
So, and that was pretty cool, because one of my favorite features of that syntax highlighter was that if you saw a function in the code, you can click on it, and you could there'd be a drop-down list, and you can click on that and see documentation for that function. And I wanted to say it linked you to the Codex article. I'm not exactly sure, but I thought that was a really cool way to learn these different functions. And right there, the documentation and the line numbers were nice, and the colors, those were all nice. However, CodePress was disabled in 2.8.1 due to browser compatibilities, and it never returned to WordPress. Yep. Now, hopefully, CodeMirror, the team learns from their mistakes. In fact, there's a 7-year-long track ticket. It's been 7 years now. Since WordPress had syntax highlighting, and it's at, 7 years already. Mm-hmm. Wow. But they're looking at CodeMirror, and they've selected CodeMirror. Now, CodeMirror is not the most accessible. In fact, if you look at the track ticket, there's a very long discussion about the accessibility issues that are involved with these code editors. And CodeMirror does have its issues with accessibility, but it looks like the plan is to go with it for now and to iterate as much as they can in future versions to fix those accessibility issues. So at least we have a pretty good syntax highlighter in WordPress core. So I'm hoping that this CodeMirror has function lookups again, kind of like we did, because there's been so much improvement to the documentation in WordPress that I think that would really be a standout feature. And the autocomplete would be nice. The CSS stuff would be nice. Colors, line numbers. I mean, I wouldn't need anything that special, but just having the basic like that I think would be beneficial for a lot of people. And then kind of putting that also into the edit additional CSS part of the customizer, that just makes sense to me as well. So those are just some of the highlights of what we could look forward to in WordPress 4.9. So with all that said, boy, what a hell of a show, John. I'm just doing it because you said it's creepy. So I want to get to my pick of the week, and it is WPisNotWP.com. And this is by Casper Hubinger, and it's a tiny progressive web app that outlines the differences between WordPress and WordPress.com. Contributions can be made on a GitHub repository, which I'll link up to in the show notes. One of the things that I'm going to try and submit a pull request for is on the bottom left. It says WordPress powers 28% of the internet. Now, there's been a lot of talk within the past couple months with this term, this statement, WordPress powers 20% of the internet. The internet is a big place. 28% is a lot of sites. But if we go back to the figure that's often cited by W3Techs, They say that it's from the top, I think it's million, the top million sites as tracked by Alexa. WordPress is used by 28% of them. Now, that's a big difference, 20% on the internet versus 28% of 1 million sites tracked by Alexa. So I think there needs to be some a technicality added here, or at least a little bit of an explanation as to what that 28% means. So I might issue my first pull request and see how that goes. Just a little bit of a technical thing that some, you know, a number of people have taken issue with. And even as I think about it more, it does seem rather strange to say WordPress powers 20% of the internet. Well, you know, the top 28% of the top million sites is not the internet.
It's true. And I think it's 100 million sites, but the page from
It might be 100 million. It's probably a more accurate number.
The W3Tech's website, and I think it's really smart to talk about WordPress's market share because it's increasing. And once it starts going down, you watch how quickly we stop talking about it. I think it's really smart to continue talking about it because the number is so it's so vast, like between WordPress and everybody else. The gap is just so huge. But you don't, like, no one else talks about their market share the way that we do. Like Apache and Nginx or whatever else don't talk about it this way. But on the W3Tech's page, there's even a quote or a snippet, and I like this one. WordPress is used by 59.4% of all of the websites whose content management system we know. This is 28.5% of all websites. And so if you there are different numbers that we could choose to talk about too, right? Like if we're really counting on the numbers from W3Techs, we could be talking about the 59.4% number if we really wanted to, but it almost sounds absurd. The number is so huge, and the number of sites that they know about is kind of an unknown, so it maybe isn't even that important. But if we ever get to a point where WordPress powers 60% of all websites on the web, would anybody believe you? Like, would anybody be like, yeah, of course it is. Like, that's, I don't know. It just seems like I hope we get there, right? I hope it happens, but it just seems, it seems irrational to have that much of the web running on any one thing. Gosh, I don't know.
And just for clarity, just for accuracy's sake, on the technologies overview page that talks about the methodology of W3Techs, they say that they include only the top 10 million sites, top 1 million before June 2013, in the statistics in order to limit the impact of domain spammers. They use website popularity rankings provided by Alexa using a 3-month average ranking. They say that Alexa rankings are sometimes considered inaccurate for measuring website traffic, but we find that they serve our purpose of providing a representative sample of established sites very well. Now, they also go on to say there's a couple other caveats here, but because our definition of website differs a bit from Alexa's definition, the top 10 million websites are actually less than 10 million. However, this has no statistical significance. Now, the reports are updated daily, and they also have a disclaimer, but definitely see their quite kind of an insight into their methodology there. But those are the numbers. That's the market share that everybody refers to.
I need
to
look and see. Someone had posted in Slack. Someone had posted in Slack BB Press's numbers from a forum tracker site.
Yeah, I actually I brought that up. I saw that, and it was it built with?
Yeah, it might have been. I was pretty surprised. I mean, because it's numbers that I had never thought to look at before, and here's where I scrambled, but I was like, oh, that's a pretty impressive amount of sites considering forum software and other what I would consider to be kind of more popular projects like Discourse, It was cool data to see, so I guess I should try and find that and pull it up and talk about it later.
Yeah, I'm looking at the built-with statistics for BB Press. Let's see. Get a list of 450,149 websites using BBPress, which includes location information, what those people eat for dinner, hosting data. I'm just kidding. It doesn't say that stuff about dinner. But, you can see the different market trends here. Top 100K, top 10K. So BBPress is used on quite a few sites within the top 1 million. And then, you know, as you get down to the top 100K, there's some big BBPress forums out there, apparently.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
So, yeah, you got some market share there. So, you know, you, in the BBPress redesign, just slap on that percentage up there for some reason. Say, we power so much so-and-so's discussions on the internet.
I think it's value. I think it helps. I think it's convincing. It's like good. It makes people feel confident with their choice when everyone else has kind of made similar decisions. Everyone goes for the cheeseburger, so you get the cheeseburger. Like, I don't make sense.
I can have cheeseburger. I haven't visited that site in months, maybe even years. I don't know. Hey, sir, do you have a pick this week?
I don't. I do. I'm going to, I don't have a plugin that I've picked, but I am picking a talk that is one of my favorite talks on WordPress.tv from my friend John Blackburn, who works at HumanMade at WordCamp Europe this year. He gave a talk titled A Deep Dive into Roles and Capabilities. And so myself, as one of the maintainers for the core roles and capabilities component, thought that he gave a really, really good talk on what exactly they are and how they work and what they do. And alongside of that, I have not been shy that one of my favorite WordPress plugins is also by John Blackburn, is the user switching plugin, which is a favorite of many others also. So check out John's talk on WordPress.tv. We'll include a link in the show notes and give it a watch. It's a really good talk. And check out user switching, which could also almost be a core feature. Like, it's so good and so well done that the ability to see what other users are seeing, like log in as them, is so powerful. It's so cool. So that's my pick of the week.
Excellent. So that's going to do it for this episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. And you can follow me on Twitter.
As if you're going to use Twitter, like you're on a Twitter hiatus. You can't talk about following you on Twitter.
Bother me following me on Twitter. but if you want people following you, where would you like them to go?
Don't follow me either. Just don't worry about them anymore.
The hell with Twitter. All right, you can, until next.
Follow me on GitHub at JJJ.
And you can follow me on the web somewhere. I mean, I'm not hard to find.
I'm sure you're on Pinterest posting, pinning nice pictures of flowers and train tracks.
This is a great show.
Thanks for being here, John.
And until next week, have a safe, enjoyable rest of the week, everybody. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon for more WordPress happiness goodness.
I'm uncomfortable.
Just say bye.
Bye.